Santa Cruz here at 96.3 FM. Bathurst Piers Broadsides in April 2003 edition. Stay tuned.
Their stance is on that?
I haven't really been involved with the issue myself directly.
but I remember being directly involved at the time we passed the prevailing wage,
that
during the early days of redevelopment.
Which was?
The downtown recovery plan.
Early 90s.
And the theory was that we don't want union contractors who hire union labor to be at a disadvantage when we're bidding on these projects, because non-union contractors.
The speakers threaten to do anything more substantive than simply shake their fists and say, oh, fie on the city council?
Well, I don't know where the unions are wedged in the law to enforcement, but among other things, the timely presentation of these is required under California State Labor Law. It's required three days within 3 days to show the payroll status, which are compliance with the prevailing wage.
Has that demand been made?
Yes, and they took 5 weeks, and then from the testimony there, it
was... Dick Wilson is busy investigating the arson of City Hall, which we can see over here. The City Hall has been devastated. And were you responsible for this, by the way?
It wasn't me.
Oh, sure, I see. I'm not a smoker myself. You know, what about the issue, this is one of my favorites, of the war situation abroad? I know it's considered to be unfashionable to talk about, violating the Geneva Accords, illegal wars, preemptive wars, and so forth. But wasn't the city council supposed to be debating a war resolution or an anti-war resolution at this council session?
They're going to be debating it. If they don't get to it tonight, they'll get to it the next week.
Oh, is it on the agenda?
It is on the agenda.
It is on the agenda.
Right, it was added, sort of.
Oh, who added it? Do we know? Don't know.
A live interruption from this tape, which was made a couple of weeks ago at the last Liberty City Council meeting, which was a while ago. It was the fourth Tuesday in April, and they won't have another one until the second Tuesday in May, coming up, I guess, a week from Tuesday, with all things. They didn't have anything on the agenda regarding the war, even though Scott Kennedy and Ed Porter had promised to have something on the agenda. And this makes the fourth time anti-war action or forum or resolution has been postponed by this city council. For those of you who somehow think that Santa Cruz is out there on the forefront, think again. It's not the case. Emily Riley's explanation was unclear to me. She said, she simply said that Ed Porter and Scott Kennedy, the vice mayor, who had proposed resolutions, each of them sounded both pretty good to me, asking fundamentally that the U.S. military get out of Iraq, took it off the agenda. And apparently it's now, if it's not in the dead file, it's certainly in the missing file, because I've heard nothing about it. There's been no discussion. Riley hasn't called back with any more information. And Emily, if you're listening to this show, feel free to call in and let us know when the anti-war resolution is coming back. I think it's been four times postponed because Riley postponed originally the March 19th City Hall meeting at the Civic Auditorium. She actually canceled it because she said that there hadn't been enough seats filled at the Delano Theater. It was less than a 500 capacity. It was about 470 or something like that. Other people turned away, but that could have been a fluke. But in any case, March 19th was the day or the day before the award started. It would have been obvious that the team planned to hold the war rally, and it was postponed. I perhaps received more criticism of their favorite representative, Sam Farr, who got the worst of it at an earlier forum, which had likewise been postponed month after month until people pressured her finally to throw a forum, which he threw in February. It would have been after the war started, except that massive peace protests and other concerns like Turkey's just refusal to assist in the invasion slowed down the U.S. invasion, and the UN process slowed it down somewhat. The second, actually, there was a series of delays by the way. It happened, there was another delay on the town hall meeting here. And there actually was this very, very badly attended town hall meeting in the Civic, badly attended, of course, because it was postponed from March 19th, and the issue was a hot and important one. record of what had happened the night before. And they rejected Ed Porter's proposal that it would be held in 2 days. And Porter didn't push it, of course. Porter often starts off with some ideas that sound pretty good, and then evaporates into the background. He doesn't have the majority support, so if he doesn't have the vote, so it's just pretty much getting a phone every Sunday morning until we announce we can't get anywhere. People are saying no or anything. But in fact, you do get somewhere by raising issues before the community in a clear, principled, and persistent way, as Doug Rand and other activists have found out. You know, slavery was not abolished by persuading the slave owners to engage in a vote on an issue. You have to mobilize masses of people around these issues, and sometimes, you know, it takes more and so forth. Backstage jittering, you folks in this politician that we're stuck with mostly. And so it's clear this issue we hear Ed Davidson talking about, which is the issue of the prevailing wage violations of the city. The city manager and the bureaucracy sound like they're violating the prevailing wage requirements that require that union contracts, that union wage unions, or that people paying equivalent wages to given contracts in, you know, these big buildings that are up in town, South Guard and Pacific, although that's currently not the case. And finally, after a year, Carpenter's Union, or the Plumbers Union, both came forward, and I guess there have been some saltier discussions beforehand. And we did have a caller. They have not called back to you really over the last year. We repeated and tried to get them to come on here. At least they haven't called this broadcast. But they did a week or two ago. And there was a speaker on the issue. And I want to thank them. And I also thank them for doing the city council and raising the issue. Now the question is, are we going to take some picketing, some direct action, some kind of protest might be in order to bring the issue home? Because these liberals on the council are very vulnerable to shaming on these people if they do forces do it. Because they came to power, shaming people like Michael Upton, one-time so-called feminist socialist, that, you know, they are pro-labor, that they are pro-working people. And yet to allow this to continue is clearly a contradiction which we're going to have to claim or correct. And I think that's the conclusion. Stand up today. If you want to raise the issue with the mayor on any of these matters you hear on my show, he does have a 24-hour phone number, which he does not publish, but this nonetheless is a public number. It's a phone line at the city council offices, 420-5022. And I encourage you to give a call. It's 420-5022. He should be accessible. This number makes it accessible. In fact, you can reach you through the switchboard line, 420-502, I've been able to raise, and so the best way is to use this direct line that puts you in the same place, 420-5022, for me. And a Riley prevailing wages, please start following city law, passed years ago, according to Ed Davidson. And as I said, I'm sorry to say that Ed was wrong, it wasn't on the agenda, and it wasn't put in the city clerk, so it had never been on the agenda, or hadn't been on the agenda, it was for days. And that was the story. I got some sort of positive statements from both Ed Davidson and Ralph Meibler, who thought that there was maybe a role that was on the agenda, but it was not. And I came out and really got that idea. I was stuck for their meeting because I was in the Capitola 13, who we're going to talk more about later. That's the group that stood in front of the military recruiting centers and were arrested for trespass and were yesterday, or the day before yesterday, discharged from all charges. I should have been to the road, I should say, handcuffed, put into a paddy wagon, taken to jail, released right outside of jail after the military, being held, maybe been held, and then dragged to court, where the court date disappeared, and then essentially misrepresented, they were told they were going to get notices by a week ago as to what they're going to be charged with in the end. Bob Lee broke that promise, and then he didn't have the criticism by attending a press conference, which was announced all this to the media on Friday morning. Thank you very much, Bob. He did, however, respond to people and to pressure, not with police, but with meaningful, to some extent, meaningful concessions that I talked about before. When we arrived, the Capitol arrived at the courthouse a week or two ago, and held our press conference and said, well, here we're going to get rid of him for this trespass of intent to interfere with a business credit. at the county fence to deliver $15,000 to $20,000, announcing the riot squad to take us in. And they weren't violent. They were very polite and courteous, but I got a misimpression about the behavior of the Capitol Police and the county's deputy on this occasion. But nonetheless, there's a cost, and this folks is ballyhooed about the PayPal's big bill. But look at all the money these protesters are wasting yet, yet, yet. Actually, we didn't call the police. None of us dialed 911 or even the number requesting assistance. The police were called by other people. And the police officers who arrested us, I think we would have been arrestable by probably two officers. I mean, you know, they didn't need 50, 70, I don't know how many police they had there to arrest us. We were a peaceful, nonviolent group. And it was a symbolic protest, also, it looked like to me. I mean, I was not the organizer of the protest. I was one of the Capitol Police, a supporter. But we're not talking about either people breaking windows or even, you know, going limp. I mean, people just, you know, they were arrested. They rocked for the van. It was, you know, how much money can 13 arrests cost? And so, you know, how much, I guess, maybe like 4 or 5 police out of it. But in any case, there was a huge presence called out. And the fault of that was the fault of the paranoid police bureaucracy. And Kim Allen, who made some comments in the paper the day before yesterday, and perhaps the day before that, there were actually back-to-back stories Tuesday and Friday on the front page of the Sentinel at Capitola 13, Girl, Capitola 13. You know, the implication that somehow peace protesters were wasting money was, of course, inside out and upside down, and the Alice in Wonderland version, just like Bush's claim, the master of weapons of mass destruction, the going after weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, is also the inside out lie. This is not true. You know, some of us wish there had been more massive protests, wish there had been blockages of major arteries, wish that there was still some major protest stopping this, showing Santa Cruz was not a bully. For this Iraqi occupation, the killing of civilians, the installation of a puppet government in Iraq. But that's not happening, as far as I know. Maybe I'm missing it again, maybe not referred to the media. I haven't referred to the Indian media, which that country is independent media either. You might want to come into that. That's a internet website at www.sandacruzsmileyreadies.org. So, in particular, there's a lot of good stuff. They changed their website recently. They're having some trouble with the server, but I think they've got it fixed. It is now doesn't take an hour to get on. Yes, it can reach the website and go through the website too. I was having trouble doing it a couple of days ago, so it's a bit better. You can also post on this website. You have a story of your own or your police conduct on the animal work. I'm not a police officer, but people give service, so I think it's a matter of public interest. I'm going to expose questionable business practices, discrimination, bogus city council behavior. It's available for you, and it's a great website. You don't have to go through a fancy sign-in process. You just write your article and you post it, www.santacruz.indymedia.org. You also can reach me during this show at 427-3772 if you want to be on the air. 427-FRSC, 427-3772. That's the number of the studio line, 1.1, and I keep an eye on the phone because sometimes I miss it. But good for Troy. If for some reason it's always busy or you can't get through or you have access to a computer but not a phone, rnorse, R-N-O-R-S-E, at hotmail.com is my email address. Again, rnorse, R-N-O-R-S-E, at hotmail.com. And I will occasionally check that to see if I get any messages. So far, I haven't. But, hey, if you want to get in touch with me, I would be happy to read what you have to say on the air for some reason in case you don't want or choose not to speak. Thanks for welcome this week. 427-3772 is the call-in number. We're also broadcasting, and in case you're out of the area, 831 is our prefix. 831-427-3772. If you're a PSA, you can get us a radio at 427-4523. 831-427-4523, which is our voicemail. And you can also leave information about anything racial or whatever, any work you want to offer. If you want to be part of a collective, you have any down the road. you're welcome to go down as well to propose that, give your phone number. Usually, I think almost invariably we require a demo tape, which our trusty screening committee screens for relevance, political correctness, and saleability. I'm just kidding about the last. We are non-commercial, and we are sort of anti-commercial here. So you get razzed if you do commercials on the air and stuff. But hey, if you've got a public service announcements, that's something that we're going to care about, and I'm interested in that. And I think the community should be able to talk to itself, and that's what this my show is about. And I think a number of broadcasters feel the same way. So give a call on the voicemail, 427-4523, if you want to leave a check, if you got some money on the board, if you want equipment. I'm looking for a VCR. The VCR's video doesn't have to work. Its audio is the only thing that has to work, because we no longer have a VCR in the studio. So I cannot play you the fine selections from our outstanding city council meetings anymore from the videos. That's too bad. Although perhaps it isn't too bad. I'm sure that most people had enough of the city council, and I can appreciate that as well. Okay, again, 427-3772 if you want to call in. Snail mail, that's the on-air line. Snail mail, P.O. Box 7507. Again, P.O. Box 7507, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. Got a check, you make it out to FRSC or Free Radio Santa Cruz. And we're also on the net. Apparently at a new address, www.freakradio.org. That's what I see written up here. So that's new to me. I hope I'm not giving out misinformation. www.freakradio.org, and it could be a /FRSC after that call. Although if I get to that website, it might be able to just click on an FRSC for the website because We also broadcast, we are relayed on Free Radio Olympia in Washington at 91.3 FM, on Mojo Radio in Mendocino at 87.9 FM, and on Free Radio Ashland at 87.9 FM, and this happens at different times. So if you are an independent radio station on the radio broadcast, just hey, go for it. Just get a call to the voicemail, call 1-457-4533 for that information. And someone who has the information, one of them too, will be somebody there to get back to you. We were listening to a tape of the last city council meeting, the opening session, I think the last one of the Federal Committee of the Capitol of 13, here on the side of free and at liberty, and who knows what we're going to do next. We're just wild and crazy. Actually, this is quite an interesting bunch of folks. These are most the people I didn't know before this protest. They are school teachers, they're moms and dads, they are already retired people. There's just a variety of people. They're young activists, current, and they all came together in front of the Capitol Repeating Station back in March, and just said no to the world. And I need to say no to the occupation because it's fading away from the paper, so it ain't fading away from the left. That's the truth. Anybody has any ideas about this? Another is even less than offer. I think about my job after the game. If you're out there, you talk to me personally or to a cop, then it's a matter of defense of freedom. The cop I work with, you can call 423-CUSH, 423-H1FF, 423-4833. That's the number. And leave a message. There's a long message there, a little bit out of date. Capital Freedom is just at liberty, and not really disregarded for much about that. That's all I'm going to do. But you can catch other information that might be interesting for you, if you haven't heard it, and you can also leave a message if you need some information that you might find interesting. We were going to have a guest today in the studio, an older woman arrested by San Francisco police over at the Human Resource Center back in September. He faces a trial in May. Kidney Jean has kind of wound her down, could be there with medical problems. I tried to talk about her case. I think I'm going to talk about her case later today. It's quite an interesting case. I'm going to talk to an officer at Milton currently at the office here in Hall of Fame, Western Hall, way back in September. I think originally it was Psycho, the Memphis Center, the Hall of Fame, but Memphis Park, I think that's still in the Memphis Center. So, crime was back and forth, between the Memphis Hall of Fame and that part. And it's going to be a different spot option at the Hall of Fame, this is in. And I haven't done my research yet to figure out where the Hall of Fame is, this is in itself. Really, if I stand at that point, it's going to be clean. To some extent, and providing evidence that there is no legal place for the 1,500 to 2,000 homeless people each night in the city alone who need a place to sleep and haven't got one, and therefore ticketing them is not just abusive, but unconstitutional under the necessity defense. Actually, I guess you would say ticketing should be unconstitutional, and probably is. The courts haven't found the ticketing unconstitutional. They have found that the necessity defense has to be provided in a camping case, particularly if there's no other shelter. And for 95% of the people tonight, there ain't going to be no shelter out there. There's place for 39 people or less on the floors of churches, and those spaces are taken. And the Homeless Listener Center has put out little statements that people could give to a police officer, signed statements saying, you know, there ain't no place to go. And unfortunately, our lawmakers, in all their lack of wisdom, perhaps the word is, instead of saying that if there's no place to go, the police officer shall not issue a ticket, they said, if the armory is full, the police shall not issue a ticket. And of course, that means that when the armory isn't open, it hasn't been an issue. So because of the scrutiny around this issue, I think they have to some extent backed off, though there seems to actually been a resurgence, not just a sleeping ban, but blanket ban and camping ban tickets. And those are sort of some subtle distinctions in the Municipal Code 6.36, which supposedly regulates but actually criminalizes camping in the city limits, which at some point I'll discuss. If you're interested in any of these issues, if you're having legal problems, we've got no lawyers, zero lawyers, but we have had some experience. Huff has, that's the Huff we I'm using. You can come to Huff meetings at Baker Square every Wednesday morning, 8:30 a.m. Baker Square is a restaurant at 1107 Ocean. Coffee is free if you're with the Huff group. And if you got a problem, we can talk about it. And who knows, maybe you'll get some advice, you'll get some solidarity, you might even get some supportive protest, for example, at the Lulu Carpenters, where Lulu Carpenters, the cafe on the mall across from Jamba Juice, the owner, Manfred Srinath, assaulted two peace protesters back in March, and was actually, the police surprisingly enough charged him, or the DA, of course, has done absolutely nothing and refused to return phone calls, so looks like Srinath is home free at the moment. But we raise the flag of alarm on that. We set a table outside his cafe and start encouraging people to at least talk to the owner about what's going on here, encourage other patrons to think twice before they patronize, encourage the community to be aware that there is a two-tiered system of justice as well as a discriminatory system of treatment in some cafes, and perhaps in town generally, who knows. And some have even raised the dreadful specter of racial discrimination as well as economic discrimination. No, of course, that couldn't happen here in Santa Cruz. There is no racial prejudice in our police force. Chief Belcher assured us of that, and we eliminated the Citizens Police Review Board. The City Council actually eliminated the Citizens Police Review Board 4 months ago because it wasn't necessary. This was this out-of-town lawyer, Bob Aronson, to address the issue. And Bob is, every two days a month, Bob comes down and looks over any complaints and he deals with the whole thing. So, you know, sit tight, smile, and don't worry. No problems. Anyway, Huff deals with these issues. Huff addresses them. And Huff raises the alarm about them. You can also go to a website if you're interested in Huff, www.huffsantacruz.org. www.huffsantacruz.org. It's not as updated as it could be, but it still has lots of interesting information. Some of it's historical from 2002. Last year, but still relevant this year, unfortunately, because the same kind of shit goes on. Let's hear a little more of Ed Davidson at City Council. You can tune in if you want to talk to me or to the rest of the community or to all of us together at 427-3772. Hoping to hear from you, and we'll be continuing. This is a 3.5-hour show. We started at 9:30, actually 9:35, and we go till 1 o'clock. So sit back, grab a piece of pavement, make sure the rain doesn't fall on your portable FM radio there, or, you know, if you're lucky enough to be indoors, stay warm and toasty, and try to get to a phone if you've got stuff to say about what you're hearing on the air.
Because when I called Leslie Cook, I was told it was not on the agenda, and when I called Mayor Riley, asked what the hell was going on, she didn't call me back, so I assumed that...
Well, I think there was an announcement after the dinner break, some sort of announcement.
After dinner, anti-war.
I wasn't paying attention to that.
I'd better get it together.
I haven't been paying attention to the war resolution by this council, because I think they're just flapping their gums.
Our council flapping its gums? Ed, wash your mouth out of whispering.
Then they have to cut your testimony down to 2 minutes because they've been taking so much time discussing
that. I have important things to talk about. You don't seem to understand that.
That has nothing to do with the city business, and the city's got plenty of business to deal with the budget.
It's redevelopment. We have the Vista project. How's that going along? The old Dolphin Lead boondoggle on the beach front.
Well, it's interesting. The last meeting's review of the 5-year results came about. I was the only person for the redevelopment. And the mayor said,
well, they didn't want you to, you know, I mean, they might. Seven other people might have come in after you spoke, and after all, we don't want to make an exception. Ed, they may not want to hear you. I don't want to say that, but it's a possibility.
Hey there, caller. Can you hear me?
Very faintly.
How about now?
That's better.
Okay. We're interrupting this Ed Davidson interview from City Council meeting a couple weeks ago because you are calling in.
Well, great. I just heard your program for the very first time.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, as a person who is afraid of the right-wing shut-up-and-get-in-line crowd,
right.
I was very interested in what you guys seem to be doing. You know, I used to be on the radio in this area.
Hmm.
On the KSDO, the AM station?
Yes. You know, you have a kind of a vaguely familiar voice. We were actually... I thought that the KSDO led the right-wing Shut Up and Get in Line.
Well, exactly the point. That's why I say I used to be, because in one of the earlier purges of, you know, lefty voices, I was thrown out by the Zwirling family. And I've now been banned for life from KSDO.
Hey, me too.
And so I feel a kinship with you.
Actually, I don't know if I'm banned for life, and I'm not even sure if I'm banned, but I've been told that if I use the words Free Radio Santa Cruz on the KSCO, that's our local AM station for those who don't know, airwaves, the person who had me on the show, in this case Rosemary, will be fired. I don't think they're going to fire.
Well, first of all, that's a lie. Because nothing that you do could get Rosemary fired, because no one else will work with as well, and you do as good a job as Rosemary does there. You know, she's what holds that together. People like Rosemary.
That's true.
Yeah.
Tell me, we're talking, what you want to say who you are?
Well, no, actually, because I'm afraid of the reaction of the right wing in this town and in this country have shown themselves that they can't be trusted with the truth.
Yeah. That's always a real dilemma, because the rest of us need to have the truth.
Do we ever? And, you know...
Yeah.
I am not a get-in-line lefty. I'm a person who has both money and a sense of shame, embarrassment, and what's right. So while I'm not, you know, a person who can get behind the class warfare that the left sometimes wants to engage in, I am also a person who would like to see certain CEOs lined up in a firing squad.
Well, you... What questionable person? What can you say?
Well, exactly.
The point of this call
is that I am frightened for America, which I love deeply. Unfortunately, I find myself having to love the concept of America and what she can be versus the reality of America and what she has become under this administration.
Right.
So I'm very curious as to what I can do to just not shut up and get in line, to be as the biggest thorn in the side, as dissentful as humanly possible. And if I can help this radio station to do that, I'd like to.
Well, my first suggestion, of course, you can always become a program if you want. If you've got a program, I had a definite program before. What kind of a show would you have on KSC?
We would just discuss the issues of the day,
mm-hmm.
and I would just be real clear to be as honest and clear about the right-wing agenda as possible. Because I'm not pro-Democrat, per se.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a Green, per se, or a Libertarian, per se.
Mm-hmm.
But what I am, and through all this time, and what I think we all need to be, is hateful and frightened towards the bigotry, the anti-speech issues of the right.
Have you, what interests me, and maybe you don't want to talk about this on air, but maybe you do, because I think others would be interested too. There's been a recent controversy about his rulings. I think there was a letter in this week's Saturday Metro, Good Times. He had this sort of an hour for the lefties in the midday deal when he allowed people an hour. Christopher Kuhn came on, I guess Thomas Levitt, there were some others. But then he announced that everybody had to get a sponsor, and that kind of, that was back to right-wing business as usual. But I'm wondering, what happened with you, and how did you get bumped, and when was that, how long ago, and you want to give us some background?
Well, to the best of my memory, and I'm one of these, aging hippies whose memory is bad for so many good reasons.
Yeah.
It was about 3 years ago that I was thrown off the air, and at the time, they just sort of they did a purge then of everybody who wasn't a right-winger at that point, too, even though there wasn't even a war on. I know there's really things you need to shut up. When there is a war on, or when there's a contemplation of a war on, or I guess any old time at all if you're not spouting right-wing rhetoric. I was just told one day by Rosemary, the day before I was getting ready to broadcast again, having prepared my show, I was told that I had been fired and I was never to set foot in the radio station again.
Any explanation?
No. I actually think what happened, though, was... I had been on the air with Michael on his show, The Saturday Special.
Mm-hmm.
He does a vanity show every week.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, we were talking about the future of the radio station and the like. And I had said something about as a professional in the radio business, and he sort of laughed and suggested I wasn't a professional. And then I agreed with him, saying, well, I guess since you don't pay me anything, I'm probably not a professional. The professionals get paid for their work. And then I guess that was considered airing the dirty laundry of the station, the fact that Whirling gets people to work for free. And the other thing I think that's interesting is you brought up the article in the paper, which is to digress, which is what I
sure.
do as an ADD person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just lost it there.
Well, while you're recovering it... When was your show on? How long was it? An hour show? Or?
I was on whenever they asked me to be on. It was fun to do radio, and they were slightly unorganized, so that I was on with their foreign affairs consultant, Phil Vitomsky.
Uh-huh.
And we would do more
the guy with the Russian
talk.
Accent? That's the guy with the Russian accent? Or?
Yes, exactly.
Uh-huh.
His accent is real because he is a Russian.
Uh-huh.
And a guy who, suffers so from having been in Russia with their communism
mm-hmm.
that he worships private property to an extent that is ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of an interesting reaction to sort of watch there, how that informed him. So I was on a number of different shows at a number of different times. We had a drive time show that was on for a while. But the problem with the Whirling Run station is, I don't know what you know about the radio business, but the little bit I know is you're supposed to have something called an advertising sales. You know, as you pointed out, the lefties were asked to pay for their hour.
Mm-hmm.
I never heard of such a thing. That's called, the way, Whirling likes to sell at time, which is the snake oil salesman like himself, and he can, pay for the hour thing. But real radio stations, run by real radio owners, actually have salesmen who go out in the community and sell ads to business people. We're mm-hmm. trying to promote business. Now, if you run a radio station badly, if you run a radio station in a way to insult, not just to share, but to insult at least half the population, and in Santa Cruz, let me suggest to you, it's a lot more than half, well then, the advertisers get turned off to you, and rightly so. Why would an advertiser want to associate themselves with people who have been clear about attacking free speech?
Well, remember, though, I mean, you're talking to a broadcaster who uses strong words about numerous people by name, including police officers, local politicians, and it's, I suppose, I give these people the opportunity to reply.
Well, yeah, see, there you go.
Of course.
Now, what an important distinction. You actually say what you believe to be true, you say it loudly, and then you say to the people you're talking about, got anything to say about this? Most of them are afraid to show up, I'm sure.
Yeah, Emily Riley has declared she's not interested in, I think, coming on my show, period. We occasionally get Rotkin in the studio, but he's a man who's even faster than I am. I'm afraid that he talks circles around me, but I think we can still rely on his record to hold him to account.
He's an impressive talker.
Oh, yeah, he's very articulate, and he will put five true strong statements in with one significant lie as quickly as you can blink your eyes. I mean, just, I'm not that quickly, but pretty quickly. My first suggestion if you have any money, of course, is to start a radio station.
I was actually talking with Whirling when I first met him about buying his radio station, because at the time I had money. This was before it was stolen from me in the dot-com and telecom ripoff.
Uh-huh.
And I think maybe one of the things that got me fired was we were talking about the station, and he asked me if I was ready to buy it, and I said, well, Michael, you're not ready. You're not done running it into the ground yet.
Uh-oh.
And he was asking for, he thought I was a stupid person, I guess, and thought I would be willing to pay $5 million for a station, which is probably worth $500,000.
Huh.
You know.
Well, my suggestion is if you invest $1,000 in a transmitter, and maybe, I don't know, you got to invest some money in renting a place, and then get a group of people like a collective that Free Radio has. And you can also, of course, join Free Radio. You're welcome to do that. But we need a second and a third and a fourth radio station in Santa Cruz, I think. You know, I think we need more information we're getting out. And
is
it's not
it,
hard
it,
to
it,
do.
Does it make sense, though, to continue to work on the micro area? Is that going to be effective, or do we actually need a station with a signal that people get to hear?
Well, that's a good question, and you know the answer to that is I have not heard of good surveys done as to what the broadcasting reach of free radio is in terms of at least the number of people listening to the show. I mean, our reach can be as far as top of the hill and as far as south as Aptos and.
I'm listening in Capitola.
And you're listening in Capitola, which is actually pretty good. Maybe it's. That, I don't know if that's always possible, but...
Exactly. I would say your signal sounds to me like one that I can't always pick up, probably.
Right, and micropower is under 100 watts, so you end up at 40 or something.
I can shout 100 watts.
There you go. We can put you downtown, but then, of course, they'd arrest you for standing, or should sitting within 14 feet of a building. You wouldn't want that. So, yeah, the homeless laws downtown. But that would be my suggestion. I mean, and if you've got the money to purchase a bigger radio station, obviously, the problem, I know nothing about professional radio. I am an amateur, even though I've been doing this for like 8 years, in terms of the actual commercial business of radio. I mean, I don't claim to have any expertise at all in that. I've been on Zwirling shows numerous times. Personally, I like him, although I think he is, rabid about his censorship practices and unwise and how he treats, his broadcasters. And I no doubt I'm persona non grata forever for saying such things candidly. But I don't say that with any malice. I think he's also has a lot of good shows on the air and done a lot of good things, too. I disagree with him probably on a lot of his positions, but that's not really the point. I'm glad to see people putting out information. I'd love to see you put out information as well.
Well, exactly. I just think that if the Zwirlings are going to... continue to sort of insist that, okay, our message is going to be a right-wing one, and we're going to charge you more than it's worth to get a left-wing opinion on the air, then it does sort of argue that perhaps there should be a license switch around here in this area, that this station, in fact, does not serve the community by spending the amount of hours. Not able to get its clarion call amplified.
Hear you. Yeah, and I mean, definitely, sign me up for a program on your show if you ever get a station. And feel free to try to sign up for a program on free radio if you feel like in the interim you want to talk about radio station. You could have a show about media, if you wanted.
Well, I mean, that's the point. I think that's why I've been so troubled lately is that it's amazing that people in the broadcasting business, even, for example, our local big deal broadcasters over there at KGO,
mm-hmm.
You get somebody like a Ron Owens.
Ah.
And here's a guy who has now come out against free speech. I like Ron. I know Ron. I've been on Ron's show 100 times.
Wow.
But I felt, I've been so uncomfortable by the pro-war drumbeat from his show, and then the fact that anyone with a different opinion would not be given enough time to fairly respond and not just make it a one-way discussion.
Mm-hmm.
And over again, we see from the broadcasters, certainly all those on the Fox channels, like an O'Reilly,
mm-hmm.
This guy doesn't understand dissent at all. He said the other day, he was talking about this girl who plays on a basketball team for her college, and she turns her back on the flag when they do the ceremony because she's so upset that America was taking its force and projecting it to people that haven't attacked us.
Mm-hmm.
And so she was exercising her free speech.
Mm-hmm.
And O'Reilly's comment was this: okay, honey, we got the point. You should stop now.
Mm-hmm.
When the powers that be decide how long the dissent goes on, where the dissent occurs and where it doesn't, who gets to see it and who doesn't, well, then, that's sort of like the communists during Tiananmen Square saying to the students after one day in the square, okay, we got your point. Go home now.
Right. The question is whether O'Reilly's going to show up with the tanks and run over the demonstrators, and I know he'll do so verbally. The question is whether he'll do so otherwise.
Well, he will support those who do.
Yeah, that's for sure.
A guy like him probably doesn't drive a tank, but he just likes to see them used on the people who disagree with him.
Let me hurry you along.
Okay.
Because I want to give other people a chance to get in. I've got endless stuff to say myself, as usual. But if you want to call again, you're welcome to call more than once during the same show if you've got, new and relevant information to give, though, try to make your calls concise. I put this with everyone.
Well, I'm incapable of being concise.
You are.
Yeah.
I can hear that.
But I can be strong, and I can be fearless.
Mm-hmm.
And that I want to offer to my friends, to anyone who's into free speech.
Wow.
Left or right. I just think that when you try to get people to shut up and get in line, you're not an American. You're a danger and a cancer.
Well, you might find it very interesting. Later in the show, I'm going to be playing an example where I was arrested at a city council meeting, actually a city council subcommittee meeting, for tape recording. And
exactly. And this whole thing about you're disturbing the peace when a cop tells you to shut up and you don't, we need to work on that problem.
Hear, hear. Well, look, caller, you can also, again, if you want to leave me a message off air, if you've got more things you want to say, but you don't want to say them publicly, 423-HUFF, as I said, is my number, and that goes for anybody else listening, 423-4833.
Well, there's nothing I won't say publicly, but I want to thank you for your time, and I'll get in touch with you off air to see what I can do to support this movement.
Sure. I appreciate that. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And this is still free radio, where we broadcast your comments, just like the comments of the last caller, 427-3772 is the number to call in if you'd like to. I'm Robert Norris. This is Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides, a show that concerns itself with all kinds of things, but I try to get back to civil rights for poor people, human rights for poor people, and problems of police misconduct. Recently, a lot of issues of war and peace, because that seems to have a broad overall effect on all of us, particularly poor people as well. Let's hear a little more of the council meeting tape, and you may have to turn your radio up a bit because our equipment, again, needs your help. Donate some new equipment or some money at 427-4523 if you'd like to hear a bit better quality stuff. We can't do these $50,000 KUSP benefits. We don't get that. We're lucky, to get hundreds of dollars if we get it, when we get it on our occasional benefit. Although, actually, I'm not much of an accountant on that issue. I'm more of a no account. Stay with us.
my little points about concerns and so on that I had with the. They were so congratulatory to each other, patting each other and the redevelopment director for the wonderful
overpaid Seal Cirillo.
But the one thing that I didn't get to talk about in that last minute was the fact that there is a statement that cumulatively the Dolphin Leap project, or the Beach Flats housing project, so far has run up a bill of $8 million.
Really? And you got that figure from?
That's in the report. The cumulative running total for that project is $8 million, and we still have money to go. We have to move people back in. We have to, you know, they're still paying rent for the people who are dislocated. There's still ongoing expenses, and the project's not completed. Mm-hmm. So it's $8 million and counting. Mm-hmm. Now, if I divide that by the 50 units, roughly, we're talking $400,000 a unit.
Well, nothing is too good for our Mercy Housing clients.
And it'll be closer to $500,000 per unit. And what you've done is you've torn down 47 units of low-income housing.
63 units, actually, if you count
you tore down 47 units of low-income housing in those two projects.
Well, you're not counting. You're counting the Dolphin, the Lee, but you're not counting the Rex Court.
I'm not counting the Rex Court. And replace it with 47 units.
Why aren't you counting the Rex Court?
So we haven't. Well, that was done on one of the loopholes in the Mellow Act for replacement.
But whatever reason it was done, it was still done. Affordable housing was torn down, correct?
Right.
So it really was. They tore down 63 units of
housing. That's true. It's true. And
you have done so legally, but still.
Right. And part of that $8 million is money that was given as in lieu housing for the inclusionary units that were not built in the Pelton Street $750,000, you know, single family.
Oh, the Pelton Street palaces that destroyed the Homeless Garden project. Yes.
And
other Rutkin venture.
Two up on Beach Hill, two new projects by Main Street and Second.
Another Rutkin Kennedy special.
They allowed the developers to, instead of building inclusionary units, to put money into the housing fund, so that money is what's being used to build the Dolphin Lee.
Nuevo Vista project.
Nuevo Vista. And we don't get the inclusionary units, so we're actually getting, you know, fewer units than even the replacement that they're doing in terms of...
Well, I've also heard it said from the...
But the real issue is that when you demolish existing low-income housing and you replace it with an equal number of low-income housing units, you have not added to the supply of housing available to the low-income community.
Tim Fitzmaurice has assured us that the scandalous conditions in the Dolphin and Lee warranted this kind of emergency action to stop the slumlords who are exploiting the Hispanics there.
Well, I think that the only reason that I didn't attack Mr. Fitzmaurice during his re-election campaign, where he made this the centerpiece of his re-election, was because he was good on bringing forward the SRO housing ordinances and pushing these new units. And I have to say that I'm more interested in going forward than
remembering the trials of the past.
Right. Well, I mean, the point is that we should realize that because we've depleted all of our housing funds under the housing set-aside required by the redevelopment law, for this one project that adds no more units than already existed.
But what a crown and the jewel of Mercy Housing.
Right. And now that it's going up, and you look at
it... Jewel and the crown, that is. Sorry about that.
Now that you look at it, you realize that it's totally out of scale and character with the community that it's in, as is that monstrosity up on Second Street.
Well, now, just a minute. I mean, in fact, isn't it true that we've been able to, shall we say, pay off, buy off, or scare off 80% of the families that were making this Dolphin Lee housing area, the old converted motels, their playground. And we got some new incoming workers that we're going to be able to house there. Maybe some farm workers that may be a far better stock than these old families that luckily have been, should we say, persuaded to leave.
Well, let me ask you a question. Let me answer that with a question, because you raised the issue of Hispanics. What percentage of these are undocumented?
Well, that's not really an issue, you see, because we are assured that none of this funding is HUD funding, and therefore none of it is related to the issue of documented or undocumented, although when I looked at the report, as I saw it within the last 6 months for funding, it was in fact HUD funding. I guess they claimed that the HUD funding was being sent to the community center part of the project rather than the housing part of the project. To me, the issue, whether documented or undocumented, has always been how many people are we throwing out of their houses, and for whom, and for what purpose?
Well, I'm looking at a slightly different perspective, and that is we have very limited resources for low-income housing for the people who need it, and should those resources be granted to people who are not legally in this country? That's my take on it. Now, it's not that I'm opposed to...
That's also Phil Baer's take on it, I'm sure. And I would think that
legal residents and citizens have a priority to the public funds over people who are not legally in this country.
Well, I mean, there might be other priorities, too. Working people maybe should have a priority, or needy people should have a priority, whoever they are. I'm not quite sure what the priority should be, but I know there certainly should be a priority for expanding affordable housing. There should be a priority for making sure that people aren't going to be thrown out of the housing they're in unless they have new housing they can come into, which is at least as good, particularly if you're going to spend $8 million plus doing it. And it's more than that. According to PREMAC, who initially did a very good expose of this a couple years ago, we're talking, what, 15 years of affordable housing funding, something like that?
No, it's about 10 years worth of the... Yeah.
I heard it said 5 years, then I heard it was 18 years.
About 10 years worth of depleting the funds. Now, some of it was funds in the past when they were preparing for the Third Street relocation.
Realignment. Now, what about that Third Street realignment? Is that happening? I heard it said that they're beginning to investigate at least taking a bit of the property. They blocked off Lee Brandt Street, and you have a situation where the side of Lee Brandt Street nearest the boardwalk is now being considered for sale to the boardwalk. Is that true?
I don't know about that, but I do know that the option of reestablishing the Third Street realignment is still viable, because they took out the units that were not within that area. Now, there is a parking deficit right now, deficiency, in the whole beach area for visitors on the busier days and weekends and summer. And if they expand their public parking facilities, or even put in a parking structure, which is going to be an expensive project to meet those needs, I can't say that I'm opposed to that.
Now, what about the Tidelands issue? We've heard a lot about how originally a lawsuit by Phil Baer and activism by Doug Rand and concern by many community members, the victory of Fitzmaurice, Crone, and Sugar in 1998, raised the issue of the Tidelands parking lot area, which is currently, you know, some say illegally seized by the boardwalk way back in the 30s. Some say the whole boardwalk is, much of the boardwalk is, you know, illegally operated. What's your perspective on the current Tidelands issue?
Well, there are two aspects of it. The boardwalk beach area, they finally recognized that this is indeed state tidelands, and that the title to the land should remain with the state, and the boardwalk should be leasing the land from the state, and the state can charge what they...
Does the city have anything to do with this?
Nothing, not city issue. But the other issue is the river mouth. Essentially the San Lorenzo River levee that was built into what is believed to be the state claim to Tidelands, I mean,
it's currently the parking lot is that the Seaside Company has.
Right, and I'm convinced that the actual line of where the state land begins and where the private land begins is somewhere between Third Street and the current levee. It's the land, once it's state property, when you build a levee and backfill, it doesn't go to the private owner. It stays with the state.
So what's the situation? Why is that property not been reclaimed by the city and the state?
Well, they started a lawsuit, and they started going through the State Lands Commission, and then the city sort of just dropped the ball.
Another case of dropping the ball. Does the city have any balls left yet to drop?
Probably not.
Now, you also mentioned at some point that you were engaging in a lawsuit or investigating a lawsuit around Coastal Commission shenanigans with respect to the Dolphin Lee project. Has that been abandoned, or what's happened? What's the update?
No, the Dolphin Lee itself, that project, there were a lot of little minor problems with it. Among them, they made findings to reduce the amount of parking required for this project. About half the parking that was required for any other project in the city, as if people who are going to be living there, and we're talking about people who are making $40,000, $50,000 salaries, are going to have any fewer cars than any other families. So that the reduced parking requirement in an area where the older housing stock had no off-street parking. Back in the old days, it wasn't needed, just parked on the street. And now this is tremendous competition, so that it's a permit parking area in the summer, so that only residents can park on those little private streets in Beach Flats and on Beach Hill. And there's more demand for parking because of the shortage of parking in the project itself, and then they closed off Liebrand Street, and there were like 25 curb parking spaces in the permit area.
Wasn't that all taken care of, though, in the plans that were passed by the Crone, Sugar, Fitzmaurice Council?
When that rubber stamp kind of a thing that the Coastal Commission did on, I mean, whatever the city wants, it's low-income housing, so therefore it's got to be good.
Now, how much is low-income housing?
Well, it is, because it'll be subsidized.
What percentage? How many?
Low-cost housing is low-income housing at high cost. We're talking $400,000, $500,000 a unit, ultimately. That's a pretty nice unit in Santa Cruz.
What is your...
Maynard
Manson, you could have built it for $150,000 to
$200,000
a unit?
Well, that's not the point. The point is that we're taking a scarce resource in terms of housing funds for low-income housing, for the needs of the low-income.
Paying a pretty penny for it.
And just limiting it to this one project that doesn't add anything to the supply.
Right. I caught you there.
But also, there was a design issue. There was a three-story height limit. One of the two sides, where the community center building, the little triangular one, that's four stories. It's three stories of housing over one story of the community center. So it's four stories, and they required step backs at the second story for three and four story buildings. This does not have them. So that it was in violation of design guidelines that were part of the...
Well, when you pointed this out to Tim Fitzmaurice, what did he say?
Well, that part of it, I don't know whether it went specifically to that, but there were so many issues at the hearing. We had the design mistakes, the things to overcome the design issues. We had, I thought there were geology issues that hadn't been fully addressed, and there were going to be noise issues from pile driving. There were the whole abandonment of the street and the parking situation. And I got 3 minutes to talk on all those issues. I mean, gave me...
City Council before the Coastal Commission?
Before the City Council. I had 3 minutes at the Coastal Commission as well.
What did the Coastal Commission decide? Just kind of
they
rubber stamped that the Coastal Commission did?
They just rubber stamped it. It was just a little shenanigans because you go to the whole history of the beach area plan, and it was 4 years from the time that the City Council adopted the plan until the Coastal Commission finally certified. 4 years, in which time you could not bring a suit until they had finished their process. And that was 4 years ago. Keith Sugar, who was part of the opposition, the Doug Rand committee that included Sugar, Fritz Morris, and Crone, and they ran for city council on that issue, on the beach area plans, and they get on the council. 4 years later, they're off the council before the Coastal Commission's done with all their approvals, and you can actually challenge what happened back in October of 98.
Permit parking was passed last council, citywide permit parking. Any comments on that?
Yeah, it's not the problem that I thought it would be. It was just simply getting language that enables people to apply for permit parking districts, and just sort of make uniform the language.
That's not how I understand it, according to what I was told by Mark Adato of Public Works, that it was in fact it fundamentally changed the whole process so that the entire city could easily become a permit parking area. I mean, you could establish permit parking area much more quickly, didn't have to go to city council. You could essentially use a more administrative process, and also it allowed for nighttime barring of vehicles from streets unless there's permits issued to them, as sort of an anti-homeless measure, specifically authorized as a so-called dealing with the camping problem.
This, I'm not aware of any of that. I haven't really followed, but I mean the concept of it was more administrative and procedural than it was threatening anybody in particular, any neighborhood or whatever. Would
not you, according to Jimmy Kelly.
Well, I was more concerned about within the coastal zone. There are some special need issues that need to be addressed, and that any permit parking request would have to be approved by the Coastal Commission.
Of course, if they're a rubber stamp group, what the hell difference does it make?
Well, that's another issue, and I need to work on that. And
get busy, Ed.
When you have the time, I'll get into some of those issues as well.
Thank you, Ed Davidson.
You're welcome, Bob.
All right, then. So we're talking with that man about courts and occasionally City Hall, but he doesn't want to have it be mentioned by name, but he's doing some research that may indicate that referee Mulligan doesn't have the authority to sign a bench warrant. Has he signed any bench warrants?
He signed plenty. Well, I don't know if he's actually signed a single one where they operate. The process is
he's his evil twin.
He doesn't sign them. Some clerk signs them. Just initial them. We don't know who signs the warrant. They won't tell us who signs the warrant.
Well, I want you to find out. I want you to go in there and get the facts, man.
That's what I'm trying to do. We're trying to find out exactly whether Mulligan has any authority whatsoever to hear any criminal cases. It looks to me like legally he doesn't, but nobody wants to answer that question.
Well, you better dig a little deeper.
And that was a series of interviews from a couple weeks ago at City Hall. That last speaker is researching referee Mulligan, who's the man to whom your speeding ticket will go, your camping ticket, your sitting on the sidewalk ticket, your biking the wrong way on Pacific Avenue ticket. He's the referee in the basement of the county building who has been masquerading as a judge for about a decade, and more than a decade. He's actually not been masquerading. He wears black robes, and he gets all the infraction cases unless people have the sense to throw them out of his court by a preemptive challenge. And I've talked about this on the air. 170.6 of the California, I think it's 170.6 of the California Rules of Court. Sorry, the Rules of Court of the California Criminal Procedure allows you to make a preemptive challenge of any one judicial officer. And you don't have to give a reason, you don't have to give a cause, you just have to say, I don't want this person, and you can get another one. And what happens when you do that is that you get bumped up to commissioners, Salazar and or Joseph, who in many respects aren't a heck of a lot better, but they have a somewhat more working knowledge of court procedure in terms of, let's say, the ability to conduct a jury trial. Because in numerous cases, you have the right to a jury trial, and in the past, Mulligan has not informed you of those rights. He has made it, in fact, a point not to inform people of their rights, for example, to contest so-called failure to appear. When you don't appear, you get a warrant that goes out for your arrest, and it's a misdemeanor charge, which means that Mulligan can't hear it unless you agree to have him just simply to reduce it to a fine, which he does so, indicating it's some kind of favor to you. Actually, I've never seen a jury impaneled to try a failure to appear case, and I don't think they would bother, but I suppose if there were enough failure to appears that were where jury trials were demanded, they might. But I've always advised people on failures to appear, say, plead not guilty and demand a jury trial, and they'll drop it, particularly if they have some other charge they're really interested in dealing with you, whether it's something horrible like asking for spare change after dark or having a sign that says, we'll work for food while you're seated. These are both crimes in Santa Cruz, thanks to the Kennedy-Rotkin legislation passed in January of this year, also passed by the entire city council. There was not one dissenting vote on that. Anyway, Mulligan is a referee, and he is one that I encourage people to disqualify, or actually the law librarian, Pat Fremmer, is designing a disqualification form for any judge or referee, which people can freely use. Important, as I mentioned in previous shows, because recently Mulligan, apparently to stop the disqualifications, has, which have been pretty steady, perhaps people have been listening to my suggestions, perhaps they've been finding out on their own, they've come into the basement, they've requested that they be transferred to another court. Instead of having that done, once they sign a statement saying they swear under penalty of perjury, they believe him to be a prejudiced official. Again, they don't have to prove it, they just have to swear it and believe it. Mulligan, what he's done, and who knows, maybe it's to clean up his own record or under pressure from the courts upstairs that don't want so many infraction cases coming in, to require people to leave the code section, 170.6 CCP. To do that, of course, requires going to the law library, unless you happen to know it, you've heard it in my show. They won't tell you the code section because they say, tee-hee, they don't want to give legal advice, don't you know? So what this means is that the person not only has to wait on the long line in the basement, get up to the window to try to disqualify Mulligan, and then find that they have to go to the law library to be told that they don't give legal advice anyway, but go look in that book somewhere, and they have no form to do it with, so it discourages people, often effectively, from going back to the window. We have a phone call. Hi, you're on. Sorry about that, caller. Try again. We'll get back to you, and sorry I didn't notice you sooner. Got to be a little more alert here at the station. 427-3772 is the number, in case somebody wants to beat that caller and call him back. Anyway, so it looks like the possibility of a form being developed is relatively easy to bring into the court and satisfies, Mulligan will find another barrier for people to use, unless he's finally wising up and realizing that however prejudiced a jurist he may be, he's a man who used to say quite regularly, recently as 6 months ago, to the police, officers, tell us the facts in this case, as though that was somehow the deciding factor. Mulligan for years has been a biased jurist and an obstinately biased jurist. He has not been willing to cop to this stuff. Now, apparently, according to an informant at the last Huff meeting, which you can come to yourself if you want, Wednesday 8:30 to 10:30 at Baker's Square in the morning, come on down, unpaid commercial announcement, Mulligan has been getting better on this issue, at least as far as telling people about their misdemeanor rights, such things as this failure to appear charge. Let's see what this caller has to say about that. Hi, caller, you're on Free Radio.
I seem to get into trouble whenever I suggest that there's something that might be something actually useful and effective to do about
caller, we're only interested.
I have a single page.
Hello, caller.
Thing called suggested. Suggested conduct in court.
Hello.
And I would like to make it available to anyone who wants it. And I don't know exactly
how to do that.
I could fax it anywhere because I have a fax machine, and anybody could look it over. But basically, it's how to deal with administrative law courts, which is what Mulligan and company, everybody, in fact, in the county is facing. And it's a one page, and it seems to me very effective. I'm not going to say any more than that for fear of getting into trouble.
Can you
with
hear
you,
me,
I mean.
Hello? Can you hear me, caller?
I don't have any problem using it. But
caller, can you hear me?
Yeah, just barely.
Oh, okay, yeah, I was trying to kind of...
Hello?
Yeah.
Well, now I can't.
Now, how about now?
Well, no.
My goodness. Now?
Yeah, well, you know, just very, very faintly, if you speak very slowly and distinctly.
Okay.
Did you not hear me?
Yeah, we heard everything you said.
Hello?
We heard everything you said.
Oh, good, okay. Well, then that's important, and I'm happy to give my phone number, which is also a fax number.
Please.
For anybody who might be interested in a suggested conduct, a one-page thing of how to handle yourself in court against any of these charges, both to do with sleeping and traffic and, I mean, anything, basically, to deal with these charges, and I'll be happy to discuss it with them if they want to call up.
Go ahead.
My number is 454-9392.
Thank you, caller, and I'll try to talk about this on the air so you can hear about it.
Okay, thank you. 454-9392.
Thank you. Yeah, my apologies for what, I don't know, some phone lines apparently are clearer than others, and I apologize to that caller, you couldn't hear me. I'm not sure if it's, I don't think it's the studio equipment, or maybe it is, who knows. Yeah, so you can give a call to his phone number if you'd like, and I also encourage that caller to send us an email with the information. We can post it as a suggestion on the website, and then also post his number there as well. And again, if you want to reach me, it's rnorse@hotmail.com, and I'm going to tune shortly to the mail and see if I can find any email that's come in. But we have a caller, another caller, it looks like, yeah. Hi there, caller. Can you hear me?
Hi. Yes, Robert. Listen, I can't. I have no email capability. Just so you understand, if somebody has a fax, I've been offering to give a fax to the radio station, and nobody picks me up on it, so I just let it go. But I'd be happy to send a fax to have a fax given to the radio station so that they could receive messages even on the air. When somebody's on and can't be, you know, and you can't take another phone call.
Great, thank you. I tell you what, can you hear me or not?
I can hear you say, can you hear me, and that's about it.
Oh, okay. We'll do this off air then, and thank you.
No. Nope, can't hear you.
All right. Wow. Caller, you probably can hear me on the radio, and that is, I wanted to encourage you, yeah, do give a call, and this goes for anybody else who has equipment to donate to free radio, and you probably have tried this already, 427-4523. It could be that the station doesn't want or need a fax. I mean, I don't know we've ever had one here, and I guess we don't use it because our telephone line is pretty much used for incoming calls, but presumably it could also be available for faxes at different times. So you might, again, give a call to 427-4523. To see if that's something people want to do. Again, my apologies for the bad phone line. I encourage another caller to try calling in and see if we can actually pinpoint our problem. It could be that, you know, the wiretaps are just interfering too much with the station. We'll have to put through a special complaint to the National Security Court and find out just what the heck is going on. If you're going to have, you know, terrorist wiretaps, fine, but let us continue our innocent behavior, for heaven's sake. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz 96.3 FM. I'm Robert Norse. This is Bathrop's Piers Broadsides, and you can reach us at 831-427-3772.
Beat them pound for pound. Skinny to turn up the music and turn on the covers with the Fat Boys, Fat Boys. Fat Boys, Fat Boys, Fat Boys. Fat Boys so massive and Fat Boys so sweet. Fat Boys to fondle and bite. Fat Boys to feed me whenever we meet. Fat Boys to turn out the light. Fat Boys so ample to sample and hold. Fat Boys to brighten my day. Fat Boys so grand to manhandle and maul. Fat Boys to steal me away. All of that extra cheek, all of that extra cargo to carry gives me another reason to marry the Fat Boys, Fat Boys. Everyone takes a peek. Truly determined we go to the place. We're pumping our chests and we're stuffing our bases for the Fat Boys, Fat Boys. Everyone takes a peek. Truly determined we go to the place. We're pumping our chests and we're stuffing our bases for the Fat Boys, Fat Boys. Fat Boys, Fat Boys, Fat Boys.
And that was Uncle Banzai, Fat Boys. And let's hear it for the fat girls, too. Hey, hey. As one who's eating a lot of lettuce and protein these days as I go on a health diet, ho, 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 I want to remind all of you that it's not your weight or how you look. It's what you are. And that's what you have to think about, and that's what other people really relate to after they get past the veneer. It's true. It is. And I think it really is true. The whole advertising industry of America is based on the opposite. But I think the experience that you've had in your life, if you examine it carefully, my experience has told me that the really interesting, meaningful, and important contacts and important love relations that we have are, you know, not based on the deodorant we wear, the perfume we have, the clothes we happen to choose. Agreed, people make a lot of quick choices based on these things. But of course, that's what a lot of anti-homeless discrimination is all about. They don't like the look of people looking raggedy and homeless nearby. It's considered to be a business bane. Anyway, this is Free Radio, 96.3 FM. I'm Robert Norris, 427-3772. James Ney is an activist who was actually arrested for chalking a year or two before Tim Rinker, Becky Johnson, Nate Kennedy, Chelsea Hodge, Robert Norris. I was ticketed recently for chalking. I was chalking long before that, and so were most of us without any kind of problems, but the police department, under pressure from Alibaba, then of Alibaba's Cafe, which is now Cafe Campesino down there near the Host Center on Pacific Avenue, didn't like the sleeping band table, and James Ney was an activist at the sleeping band table in the spring of 2000, back in the days when David Silva was doing a fasts, as well as getting dozens and dozens, even several hundred others, to do a progressive fast and to try to end the sleeping ban, both through direct action, through an initiative — we never got that initiative on the ballot, but we worked on it — and through protests at city council. And Ney was actually the first person arrested that I'm aware of for chalking. They never tried him for chalking because, as we believed then and still believe, chalking on the sidewalk in erasable chalk does not constitute defacement of the sidewalk and is not a real crime. It is a pretext made up to harass activists who are trying to inform the community about what's going on in a very direct, clear way, and a very innocuous way. Now, in fact, the local court has convicted Becky Johnson, Tim Rinker, and others, and a higher court, if you want to call it higher, a three-judge panel, Attic, Danner, and I think it was it Barton? No, Yance, I think. Well, anyway, I'm not sure the third judge on that panel. They found that defacing the sidewalk is, in fact, chalking does deface the sidewalk. We'll see if that goes any higher. I believe it's being appealed, though maybe we have to get a report from Becky Johnson on that issue. I know that the city is now charging her more money, a huge amount of money, her and Rinker, a couple $100 for washing the sidewalk, which she could have done it for free had they asked her to do it, in terms of what marks she left. what she was responsible for. In any case, Ney is was quite an organizer of homeless people. He also is a man who has done a lot of work for homeless people. He's been he's run the Armory Winter Shelter at different times. And he has been on this show talking about the incredible adventures he's had of being multiply arrested on the same infraction ticket again and again and again, several times at work. We're going to hear the latest update on this situation where he's still being arrested on the same infraction ticket given him almost, what, 5 years ago now. That's after we changed tapes, of course. Sometimes we have a few technical difficulties in the studio, but I always encourage listeners to bear with us. Appreciate your patience.
Talking with James Ney. James, what have you been up to here today?
I actually come back to court for the same old BS, a failure to do community service hours.
How many times have you been to court for that?
God, what is it now, 10?
Really?
Yeah, probably. Close to 10. I've been arrested 4 times for it.
And this is all on the same ticket?
All on the same ticket.
The ticket by Officer Eveleth or Lefebvre?
Yeah. No, Lefebvre.
Lefebvre? For an illegal left turn or something?
Well, that's what he says he stopped me for. I made a left turn into a driveway across from the shelter, and he claimed that I was driving on the wrong side of the road, which was his excuse for stopping me. Then he proceeded to tell me that my license was suspended, took my driver's license, towed my car away, and gave me a ticket for driving on a suspended license, which actually in California is not legal.
Because
in California, you have to sign a paper acknowledging the suspension. Okay, and that's when they take your driver's license away from you. And until you sign that paper, all they can do is take your driver's license away, tell you your license is suspended, make you sign that paper, and leave you and your car alone. Okay?
Back in 1998?
Yeah, shoot, I think 98. Might have been 97. Okay? And so when I went to court, the judge said that. And he made me sign the paper acknowledging, because Officer Lefebvre didn't even make me sign the paper. Okay, the judge made me sign the paper, and supposedly that was the end of it. Well, here we are. How many years later?
6.
Yeah, and I'm still battling it. Only this time I have an attorney who is doing a good job on it.
Who's that?
Weigel? William? Weigel?
And you have an attorney. You're paying him, or he's actually a public defender?
He's actually a public defender, but I happen to know him from way back. We used to live in Stockton together. He knew my children. He was
3 times at work, and you've lost jobs over this because of the same warrant on the same thing, and you actually have done the community service?
Yes. They say I didn't and converted it back because the community service I did, I didn't go through their little office. They now have an office called community service. We have to go in and pay them $150 to go volunteer. Okay, well, I went and volunteered, because you know me. How long have I been volunteering in this community? For as long as you've known me.
You are a long-time volunteer.
Okay, so I went to Annette Markham out of Valley Churches, and she filled in the whole thing. I turned it in. Well, later we went to court, and the court said that wasn't acceptable. That was the first one. They said it wasn't acceptable because I didn't go through their little office and pay them their little fee, which I don't have $150. I am poor, okay? Judge tells me, well, they have a fee waiver system. And I says, well, even if you get it down to, you know, less, I can't pay. He says, well, they'll let you clean the office. No, gentleman told me that unless I made a down payment of $25, it did lower the fee from $150 to $75. But before he would even talk to me, I had to make a down payment of $25.
Office on Cedar Street or on...
Right over next to Pergolesi's?
Yeah, Community Options.
Right, and told me there was no way that I could get the whole fee waived, even though that's what the judge said.
Which judge?
Irwin.
Irwin Joseph?
Yeah, Irwin Joseph, which I went back and told the judge that, and he says, well, that's not my understanding, and converted it back to a fine, which I was paying. Okay? So there's never been, so since that hearing, there's supposedly never been.
On Free Radio Santa Cruz here at 96.3 FM. Bathurst Piers, Brad.